This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Now a hair growth product with natural ingredients and fast results. Reveal from GCNLife.com.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology, brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku,
and GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. In this hour, we're going to talk about the coronavirus, where it came from, what is the latest information about how we can stop it, and how to prepare for the next epidemic. With us today is science journalist Deborah McKenzie. She writes for New Scientist magazine, published in the United Kingdom. And her book, one of the first books to come out about this virus, is COVID-19, the pandemic that never should have happened, and how to stop the next one. And if you want to know more about Science Fantastic, go to my website. It's mkaku.org, mkaku.org. We have 3 million fans on Facebook, about a million fans on Twitter, and you'll see reference to my 4 New York Times bestsellers. My latest one is called The Future of Humanity, As We Explore the Moon, As We Go to Mars, and then beyond, maybe one day to the stars. And The Future of the Mind, I talk about how we physicists are beginning to tease apart the mechanics of the living brain. That's right, telepathy, telekinesis, mind reading, things that were once considered way out there in science fiction, we physicists can do in the laboratory. And also in Physics of the Future, I talk about the future of artificial intelligence, the future of biotechnology, the future of space travel, all of it in my books. But today, we're going to focus on the origin of the coronavirus, what we know about it, and of course, how to stop the next pandemic. And once again with us today is Deborah McKenzie. She's a science journalist, writes for New Scientist magazine. So, Deborah, let me ask you a question. When you were a youth, a young kid, what steered you in the direction of science?
Well, I think it was just that I was interested in the nature I saw around me. I was born in Toronto. It's a big city. But, there were things in the backyard. There were bugs. There were plants. And there was the Eaton's catalog, which had this really interesting-looking chemistry set for sale. And I absolutely wanted that chemistry set. It seemed to me that, you know, that was how I could maybe do something important and learn about all this great stuff that I was sort of, you know, that was around me. That's actually the earliest I can remember thinking about it.
And what steered you in the direction of science journalism? Because you're a science writer for New Scientist magazine.
Well, in my freshman year as an undergraduate biology major, a friend of mine came up to me after a lab we were in and said, "Deb, I borrowed a car. I'm going to drive to Halifax." This was a 2-hour drive. This was a big thing for us. Because a guy named David Suzuki, he's a geneticist out in the West Coast, but he's giving a talk on how scientists should, you know, communicate science to the public. And I thought, ooh, that sounds good. So we went and we listened to him, and he was very inspiring. Of course, David Suzuki then went on to become a very well-known science popularizer in his own right. But later on, after I finished my PhD work, I sort of thought, well, you know, I could do that. I can actually write. Maybe I should try doing that instead of, you know, continuing with research. And so I did, and it worked out, and I discovered that I could write about a much wider range of subjects than I got to study as a scientist. And I was a bit of a glutton for that kind of thing, so it appealed to me, and I kept doing it.
Okay, well, let's just jump right into your book, COVID-19. The pandemic that never should have happened, and how to stop the next one. So let's begin with how it all started. You say that when it was first noticed, it could have been manageable, that the pandemic in some sense didn't have to happen. So what went wrong?
Well, I think what really went wrong was that we allowed that virus to jump into humans in the first place. That group of viruses had been discovered and characterized in 2013. A virology lab in Wuhan, unusually, actually published a report saying, look, there is this virus in bats. It's closely related to SARS. And as you may recall, SARS was a very closely related virus to COVID-19 that caused a worldwide epidemic in 2003. It didn't quite go pandemic. It didn't spread quite that readily. But we found related viruses, and in 2013, this lab published results showing that there were viruses in the bats that were already perfectly capable of infecting human airway cells. They didn't need to do any more evolving. They were happy just to infect human cells right up. At that point, that should have been a clue that, you know, humans maybe should have started avoiding those bats. And yet the scientists themselves were saying, look, bats and bat-derived products are for sale on markets. We've really got to shut this down. This is really dangerous. And I don't think anybody really took that seriously enough. It shouldn't have been a problem. I mean, bats carry lots of nasty viruses. For example, in North America, insect-eating bats like this carry rabies. And the number of people who catch rabies for bats are vanishingly small. It's extremely rare. If you leave the bats be, you don't tend to catch viruses from them. And that should have been the case. We should have heeded those warnings earlier.
Now, tell us about the wet markets, which deal with exotic animals. Some people say that we should shut them all down because, of course, where do these diseases come from? 60% of all diseases, roughly speaking, come from the animal kingdom. But what are your thoughts?
Well, in this case, I don't see a lot of compelling evidence that that particular market was necessarily the source of the bat material. I mean, it might have been. But of the first 41 cases that the Chinese reported, only a third of them, fully a third of them, were not related at all to that market, and only two-thirds of them were. Markets are also a place for human contact. It was being spread human to human by that point. It wasn't that those 41 people all caught it separately from bats. Mostly they were catching it from each other. And as we discovered later, you know, a lot of other people in Wuhan had already caught it, too, that we weren't aware of. At that time, the Chinese weren't fully aware of the extent to which this virus, you know, can make you sick and pass on through you and not even cause any symptoms. So, you know, who knows what the role of that market was. There are other ways of encountering bat-derived products. In China, there is, for example, an apparently quite popular traditional medication derived from bat feces that you put in your eye to cure eye problems. That could very well have virus in it, I mean, possibly viable virus. Nobody's really looked. But I don't think we can necessarily say that this particular infection came from the market. It might just have been spread there a lot. On the other hand, we do know that other infections are spread via these live markets. Bird flu is the really worrying one. The H7N9 bird flu that was a bit of a problem in 2013 and a few years after that was almost exclusively found on markets. And Chinese cities discovered that when they shut down their live markets, they stopped getting cases of that virus. So, you know, they pose other problems. And really, I think one should look into the hygiene of our entire food chain, including markets like that, to stop things like that happening. But, you know, when it comes to viruses from bats, it might have been that market in this case. It might not have been. The evidence isn't clear. But we should definitely find ways to keep material from bats from getting into any kind of human contact.
Now, as I understand, the Wuhan wet market did not deal in horseshoe bats at all. Zero. So, in other words, the only horseshoe bat that scientists confirmed were in the Wuhan Institute, which is at biosafety level 4, so they deal with these very, very dangerous viruses. And a case has been made that it was accidentally released from that laboratory. Well, let's take a short commercial break, and after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of a new book. The book is called COVID-19, the pandemic that never should have happened, and how to stop the next one. And if you want to get on Science Fantastic, then give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. And maybe your thoughts will be heard on 100 radio stations across the country that carry Science Fantastic. Stay tuned.
Need to do our part.
And so that we care.
Look, Matt.
I wear a mask to protect you.
You wear masks to protect me.
Let's all wear masks to stop the spread of coronavirus and save lives.
Good reasons for the public and business owners to wear and offer face masks. But not just any mask. Cheap doesn't mean protection. Sunny-Bay.com has the best value of high-quality N95 or disposable face masks anywhere. Get disposable Level 1 face masks now, a 20-pack starting at only $12, or a 10-pack of N95 respirator masks is only $34. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $35. Choose your level of protection at Sunny-Bay.com. Prices are low, but supplies are limited. Get details and order at Sunny-Bay.com, a Biomed DB design company. Go to Sunny-Bay.com for disposable or N95 face masks. Ask about volume discounts available for all businesses. Just click Sunny-Bay.com. That's Sunny-Bay.com.
Houseflies defecate every 4 to 5 minutes, spreading diseases and germs. Protect your food and your health with Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic, no batteries required, only $39.95. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at bugassault.com. Fire your fly swatter. Get your Bug Assault today.
Today, many of us are paying attention to our health, and what we eat plays an important role. But so often the water we drink is a mere afterthought when it should be a primary part of our daily nutrition. Real Water would like to change how you think about the water you drink and how it can play an important role in helping your body restore balance and reach its full potential. The key benefits of every bottle of Real Water are stabilized negative ions, balanced pH, detoxification, and it hydrates you like never before. And yes, it tastes great. Real Water is beyond alkalinity, and due to its proprietary process called E2 technology, it's the only drinking water on the market that can maintain a stable negative ionization, which means real science in every bottle. Order your Real Water today and take advantage of special pricing for this audience only by calling 1-855-REALWTR or visiting buyrealwaternow.com. That's 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com. Order now, 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again with us today is Deborah McKenzie, author of a new book, COVID-19, The Pandemic That Never Should Have Happened and How to Stop the Next One. Well, as I understand, about 96% of the genes of the coronavirus are identical to the genes found in the horseshoe bat. So people have narrowed their interest in that bat. But that bat apparently was not dealt with, was not being sold in the wet markets at all. The only place you would find the horseshoe bat were in the Wuhan Virology Institute. And so some people say, aha, 2 plus 2 is 4. The only horseshoe bats that were in the area, you have to go 900 miles to Yunnan province. In other words, the only corona bats that were there were at the institute. 2 plus 2 is 4. So maybe it was accidentally released from the laboratory. But what are your thoughts?
Certainly 4, but that second 2 is not actually true. I hate to say it, that species of bat lives in the wild in Hubei province. It's fairly common across China.
But what about the people who say that since the Hunan Virology Institute had these viruses, and since that was the epicenter of this worldwide pandemic, maybe it was accidentally released? What are your thoughts, one way or the other?
Well, first of all, there's no evidence for that, as you say. They've isolated some viruses of a plethora of viruses. There are lots and lots of different kinds of these viruses in the bats. They've isolated a few of them. They've sequenced a few of them. Of those that they've sequenced, the closest one is 96%. That's not the same. In fact, those two things have been on a separate evolutionary path for about 40 years, which doesn't mean that the virus that caused COVID-19 didn't come from the same bat. It very probably did. But it does mean that none of the viruses that they isolated and sequenced are that virus. That doesn't mean it might not have escaped in some other way. Of course, most of the virus that they study in that lab is brought back dead in a preservative from the bat caves that they study. As you mentioned, they are several hundred kilometers away. But that's just because it's a convenient cave in order to catch a lot of these bats, in order to do a lot of samples. It is a common species, as I say, across China. Basically, there is no evidence that any of the specific viruses they studied in that lab, A, were alive, and B, could have gotten out, as you say. It's a BSL-4. The thing is that lab will have records. We can look into that. There should be a fully transparent investigation. That's the good thing about labs. You can do that. They've got records. But the thing is that, you know, what gets me is that these people were trying to warn everybody. It seems a little unfair to accuse them of being the source of the virus, and they were writing papers with things in the title like poised for human emergence and poses a pandemic threat, you know? They were trying to warn us about how dangerous they were. And at the same time, you certainly have in Wuhan at least one medication being sold. I don't know that there weren't bats being sold on that market. It's illegal. So it's entirely possible that it was under the table. Anybody who was doing it went to ground pretty quickly. So I don't know that there were or weren't bats being sold on that market. But there certainly is a medication based on bat poop, if you will. That's very commonly used across China. In fact, you can buy it on the internet, which, you know, could very well have some non-neutralized virus persisting in it. And this is used to create a water decoction that you put in your eye in order to treat eye ailments. And the eye is full of the ACE2 protein, which is the receptor that this virus uses to get into cells. In fact, virologists are beginning to think the eye is really where this virus prefers to infect us. So, you know, if you were in the habit of putting, you know, bat poop-derived products in your eye, it's not surprising where if occasionally maybe one might have some live virus left in it and it might get out. I don't know if it's any easier to say that that is a likely source of this virus than to say that a highly contained BSL-4 lab full of scientists who are desperately trying to warn the world about these viruses was the source. But I do know we can investigate and we can find out what the truth might have been.
Well, recently, people have tried to track exactly when we had patient zero, that is, the first person to be infected. Some people think it was December, November, but now there's a new study done by satellite data photographing the parking lots around the hospitals, and they find a spike, a sudden dramatic spike in the number of cars stationed at the hospital, ambulance, trucks, and so on and so forth. And they find that you have to go all the way back to October. And so what are your thoughts about the fact that maybe this had been spreading much earlier than people had suspected, that maybe October, even before that, there could have been this infection starting from patient zero? What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, the scientists I know who are experts in interpreting satellite images were pretty rude about that study. It's pretty easy to attribute almost anything you want to images like that. There are three lines of evidence. There's that. Secondly, there's the fact that the genetics on this outbreak have been very clear. The first few cases that were reported in China, I mean, all of those things were sequenced, and there was virtually no difference between them. We can pretty much tell when those viruses had a common ancestor. And it was very, very unlikely to have been before early November. And we have information that the earliest known case, when the all the records are tracked back, was the 17th of November, and that fits perfectly with the genetic information. But what really is damning to me was that I looked at that data in that paper in some detail, and what you may not be aware of, because it's for some reason is not a very commonly recognized virus, but there's something called respiratory syncytial virus. It's the single largest cause for hospitalization in very young children. And when you look at all those curves for the amount of cars in the parking lot in six different hospitals in Wuhan, they're up and down. They're all over the place. I mean, one is tempted to think that the resultant curve that the scientists plotted through that mess, showing a bit of a peak sort of in October, not August as was reported, but sort of September, October, more like October, when you plotted them together, was not really representative of much because all the different hospitals were having peaks at completely different times. But one of the reasons there was a bit of a peak at that point was because the biggest children's hospital in Wuhan had a huge peak in parking in its parking lot at precisely the time you expect there to be the annual respiratory syncytial virus epidemic, which is not surprising at all. So that seems to have driven that apparent peak. Nothing else in that data really provides much evidence at all that this was circulating as early as October or, as they tried to claim, August. The data just, you know, frankly does not take account of other known viral phenomena. I mean, I even found the papers that the local medical researchers had written about when the RSV spike is in that province. And, yeah, it's then, same as it is many other places. So, you know, of course there were a lot of cars in the parking lot outside the children's hospital. On the other hand, we know that COVID-19 does not lead to hospitalization in children very often. So why would there be a large number of cars outside the biggest children's hospital in Wuhan for COVID-19? On the other hand, that happened at precisely the same time as the annual RSV spike. So, yeah, not surprising. I think that was, to be polite, kind of an unexamined piece of work, and people are giving it far too much credence and reporting it uncritically. As you may well appreciate, that's one of the problems with this flood of science we've been getting. Most of it is being posted as preprints before it's been reviewed. And I think that one might not fare so well at the hands of critical reviewers.
Okay, well, the substance of your book is that the pandemic, quote, should never have happened. So what steps were missed? What steps should have been taken?
Well, once it did jump to humans, I mean, as we all know now, it's a pretty slippery virus. I talked to every epidemiologist I know, and they were all saying, well, yeah, I mean, the minute they recognized they had a cluster of undiagnosed pneumonia, they could have, you know, contained everybody. They could have, you know, isolated them. Well, you know, they did with the cases that they recognized. But the trouble is that for some reason, they refused to admit, even though the doctors knew it. Certainly by late December, the doctors knew, because they were getting family clusters of infection. The doctors knew it was spreading person to person. And I think there was just a lot of reluctance locally to admit they had a problem on their hands, you know.
Let's take a short commercial break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And if you want to get on the air, give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters of the radio station or website, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can be heard on almost 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. So stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
The head of the World Health Organization said the coronavirus pandemic is accelerating and that more than 150,000 cases were reported yesterday, the highest single-day number so far. In a briefing, WHO said nearly half of the newly reported cases were from the Americas, with significant numbers from South Asia and the Middle East. He said, we're in a new and dangerous phase, warning that restrictive measures are still needed to stop the pandemic. The warning came that the virus is still spreading fast, and the toll would be especially great on refugees, more than 80% of whom lived in mostly developing nations. New York City's Phase 2... The Oklahoma Supreme Court has rejected an effort to require everyone attending President Donald Trump's rally in Tulsa to wear a face mask and maintain social distancing to guard against spreading the virus. The court ruled that the two local residents asking the thousands expected at the rally be required to take the precautions couldn't establish they have a clear legal right to that relief. Oklahoma has had a recent spike in coronavirus cases, but in a concurring opinion, the two justices noted the state plans to reopen the economy as permissive, suggestive, and discretionary. The capital of the USA is now moving to the second phase of reopening. D.C. officials say the anticipated spike in COVID-19 infections appears to have been successfully blunted by months of social restrictions. Playgrounds, libraries, gyms, and nail salons will now be able to reopen. Theaters, cinemas, and concert venues will remain closed. Indoor gatherings of up to 50 people will be allowed. The total number of confirmed coronavirus cases in D.C. now stands at almost 10,000, including 530 deaths. This is USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-900-8407. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-900-8407. That's 1-800-900-8407. 1-800-900-8407.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. With us today is Deborah McKenzie. She's a science journalist, writes for New Scientist magazine, and she has a new book, one of the first books out on the coronavirus. The book's name is called COVID-19, The Pandemic That Never Should Have Happened and How to Stop the Next One. Well, let's continue our discussion. We talked about the origins of the coronavirus. However, there's still a controversy about the role that the World Health Organization played. Some critics say that the WHO was late in terms of this virus, were late in terms of saying that it could be communicated person to person. And that's important because for many a week, people thought that it only stayed in the animal kingdom. But no, it's been hopping from bats and whatever to humans for weeks before that. And as a consequence, we missed an opportunity. But what are your thoughts?
Well, as I was starting to say, the virus spreads person to person, obviously. The doctors in Wuhan knew that by the end of December. But for some reason, the authorities sort of downplayed that and said, oh, well, maybe a bitten family, but we have no evidence it really spreads person to person. I think they were scared of scaring people, really. I mean, you know, China has bad memories of the SARS epidemic. They didn't want to say there was another one back, maybe. I don't know. But for 2 or 3 weeks, they didn't admit that the virus went person to person. Now, the WHO, and I know there were some people there who kind of went, well, you know, really? Because the case numbers are rising. But the thing is, they don't have the power to go in and look. The national sort of authority in this is absolute. A nation state has sovereignty over diseases on its territory, even though those diseases can then threaten the rest of the world. And the WHO can't say, that's very nice. Can we come in and talk to your doctors, please? They can't. Just China can just say no. All they can do is be really diplomatic and hope that the Chinese keep giving them information. And when people accuse them of being slow to react, look, the WHO is doing everything it could. If it can't do more, it's because its member states, including the United States, as well as China and the others, have refused to give it the power to do any more than that.
Okay, and what about the role of the Chinese government itself? Apparently, some whistleblowers in China have just disappeared. That's right. They just have disappeared off the face of the earth. No one knows where they went. Another person who also went against the authorities eventually died of the coronavirus and became a national hero, at least an underground national hero in China. So what are your thoughts about the fact that the Chinese were not just less than open to discussing the virus, but were openly trying to stop it? And even though they had a quarantine on Hunan itself, they allowed thousands, tens of thousands of people to leave Hunan to go to the West. And so some people are saying that maybe it was a deliberate infection of the West by the Chinese government. But what are your thoughts?
Well, China took a pretty big economic hit itself from that thing. I think there was, well, it's an authoritarian government. If people do things that the government has told them not to do, you know, yes, there are going to be disappearances. I mean, it's horrible. It's awful. But it happens with a lot of other things in China as well. But to jump from that to deliberately infecting the West, I mean, you know, you'd have to say, well, you know, they deliberately infected themselves, too, and took a huge hit to the GDP. I don't think China would do that on purpose somehow.
Okay, well, let's take another short commercial break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. And give us a call if you want to get on 100 radio stations that carry the show. The number to call is 612-564-8135.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
I'm here with Scott Youseum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS. Guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, with us on the line is Deborah McKenzie. She's a science journalist with New Scientist magazine and has a new book out, one of the first books out on the current pandemic. The book is called COVID-19. The pandemic that never should have happened, and how to stop the next one. Well, isn't it true that scientists were caught pretty much with their pants down when this virus first hit? We still are debating about masks. We're still debating about how infectious it is. But some people have said that maybe it's no more infectious than the flu. The flu kills tens of thousands of people, but now we are establishing numbers. So compared to the flu, how does COVID-19 rack up in terms of how infectious it is and also its fatality rate?
Well, I don't think there's very much debate about that. They established fairly early in this pandemic that the basic reproduction number, the number of cases that any one case is likely to transmit the virus to, is between 2 and 3. Now, your average flu virus is between 1 and 2. I mean, it's just barely enough to sustain an epidemic. It's just because it spreads so quickly that so many people get it during the yearly flu epidemic. This is a lot more infectious than flu and about 10 times as lethal. The best guess, I mean, we can't have precise numbers until it's been around for a while longer, but all the people I talk to say, Matt, it's about 1%, maybe a little bit more. But the one big unknown about this is that there seems to be a lot of unevenness in spread. Some people don't spread it at all. Some people spread it a lot. They're called super spreaders. And that makes it a little bit more difficult to get your hands around. If you get one super spreader after you've maybe brought the epidemic under control, then you can suddenly have a huge outbreak again.
Now, the governments of the world are saying that we should separate 6 feet from other people. Droplets fall to the ground within 6 feet. But now there's a huge debate about aerosols. That is, papers from MIT and other physics laboratories have stated that droplets the size of a blood cell, tiny droplets like what you find in perfume, can spread 20 feet, not just 6 feet. Even though, of course, most of the droplets fall within 6 feet, some of the droplets can infect an entire room. I mean, think of perfume. Perfume will fill up an entire room with ease. So what are your thoughts about really how infectious is this, and are masks really sufficient or not sufficient?
Well, masks have to be based on actual empirical observation, with all due respect to MIT and physicists. You guys base your stuff on empirical observations too, so I shouldn't say that. But the observation with this virus is that all the evidence is that it spreads in droplets. And generally speaking, it doesn't spread via aerosol. Now, we know viruses that do. Measles, for example. I mean, if you walk into a room full of people who are not immune to measles, everybody's going to get it. It's amazing. I mean, we talked about the basic reproduction number, the contagiousness of COVID-19 being like between 2 and 3. Measles is about 16. I mean, and that moves in aerosols. You know, you'd know it if this thing moved primarily in aerosols. It's mostly droplet. It behaves like it's mostly droplet. There are some procedures in hospitals, for example, inserting a ventilator into a very sick patient, that can generate aerosols. And that puts medical staff at more risk than maybe the general public is. And in that case, yes, you do get spread. The difference between aerosols is that they float on the air, whereas a droplet, as you say, will usually fall to earth, you know, within a couple of meters. So, you know, it changes the way you manage the illness. And there's really not a lot of evidence that there is significant aerosol spread for COVID-19.
Well, how do we explain the fact that super spreaders, as you mentioned, super spreaders can infect between 50 to 100 other people? Something just came out this week saying that in one church, they've been able to document by contact tracing 55 individuals who have now tested positive for the coronavirus from one individual. This individual was not in the choir, not shouting, not screaming, not singing hymns, but just sitting in a church, infecting everybody in sight. And bridge club games. One person playing bridge can infect the entire bridge club. How could that be if everything drops within 6 feet? Well, anyway, let's take another short commercial break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135, and maybe you can get on national radio.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe hand sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-900-8407. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-900-8407. That's 1-800-900-8407. 1-800-900-8407.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live-underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug-out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family survival to survivalistcamps.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
This is Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Welcome back. Once again, our special guest today is Deborah McKenzie. She's a science writer for New Scientist magazine, has been covering infectious diseases for many years, and has a new book out, one of the first books out on the subject. The book is called COVID-19, The Pandemic That Never Should Have Happened, and How to Stop the Next One. Well, we're continuing to learn more and more about how infectious this disease is, the fatality rate, and there's a debate within the scientific community about how it spreads in the air. For the most part, the viruses in droplets do fall to the floor within 6 feet. But now we have real data from contact tracing showing that super spreaders can spread it to 50 to 100 people. In one instance, we had a bridge club where one woman infected pretty much the entire bridge club. We know exactly where everyone was sitting in that bridge club game. Now we also have results coming just this week from one super spreader spreading the virus to 55 other members of the congregation. Not coughing, no singing, just simply sitting with other people infecting the entire room. Therefore, some people are saying that maybe aerosols, that maybe it's being spread in the air. For the most part, as droplets, they fall to the floor within 6 feet. But in some situations, you can infect the entire room. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's why I mentioned super spreaders. These are not that common, but when they happen, they obviously are doing something different. In some cases, it's just because of the premises they're in. I mean, for example, we learned early in this pandemic that being on a cruise boat is a pretty good way to spread the virus because you've got an air recirculation system that is recirculating air from all the different cabins. You keep people apart, but the air is moving in a particular way that tends to keep things going. Maybe there was some kind of air conditioning system in this church that tended to pick up droplets and keep them moving. I can't say without knowing more about it, and neither can the scientists involved. One worrying possibility, of course, could be that some variants of the virus are more prone to form aerosols than others. Now, typically, this doesn't happen with viruses. Flu spreads in droplets. We know plenty of different varieties of flu, and we just never see aerosol spread, really, to speak of. But then this is a different virus. Who knows? Maybe one or two patients will get a particular variant of it. I mean, these viruses mutate a lot within a single patient. You can get variants of them, very many kinds of different sort of mutations of the virus within one patient. That's normal with an RNA virus. and maybe some of them just happen to form aerosols better. This is stuff we don't know yet, and that's one of the reasons scientists would just love to get their hands on, you know, the viruses that are behind these occasional super spreading events to find out what's going on.
Okay, well, also let's get into the substance of your book about the future. First of all, you say that in some sense it's inevitable that we're going to have another pandemic. I mean, after all, roughly 60% or so of diseases hop over from the animal kingdom. And you mentioned specifically the Nipah virus. And we should be aware of the fact that there are many candidates for the next pandemic. What are your thoughts?
Well, there are many coronaviruses left in those bats. Haven't had a chance yet. For example, we've now had two coronavirus epidemics. One didn't spread so well, and because of a global effort coordinated, by the way, by the WHO in 2003, we managed to stop that one in its tracks. It took a lot of work, but we managed to stop that one and wipe it out. Now we have this one, COVID-19. Interestingly, if you have antibodies, if you have an immune reaction to SARS because you were exposed to it back then, that's not going to help you against COVID. So that tells us that two viruses from the same species of bat can cause disease in humans, and immunity to one won't give you immunity to the other. There are more coronaviruses out there in those bats. So, you know, this could happen again. We could get, you know, COVID-22 or COVID-25 in subsequent years. But then there are a lot of other viruses that scientists are worried about. There's bird flu. You know, people talk about, oh, well, when the bird flu pandemic happened, the bird flu pandemic hasn't happened. That virus hasn't learned to transmit between people yet. If it ever does, you know, we could very well be in a lot of serious trouble. And scientists have been warning about that for years, but we're not much more. We have a bit more science done on it. We've done some vaccine development, but we're not much better prepared for it, really, than we were when the alarm was first sounded in 2004. And then there is, as you say, Nipah. And people are worried about that because it's got a huge mortality rate. It's as high in some places where it's been observed as 75% of people who catch it. What really is scary, though, is that, well, again, it's one that's carried this time by a different kind of bat, a fruit bat. People get it from them one way or another. In one place, the pigs were eating bat droppings and then the people were getting it from the pigs. There's a related virus in Australia where horses are eating bat droppings and people are getting it from horses. And then there's bats who are sort of taking sips out of a kind of sap that humans tap from trees and sort of leaving the virus in that, and people are getting it that way. And people thought, well, okay, it's got to come direct from the bat. This is not spreading between people. It's not really, you know. Except just recently they've noticed, well, actually, where you have cases, you sometimes get a little bit of transmission. You know, one or two other people will catch it from a person, and it's spreading in respiratory droplets. And as we all know, those can be hard to control, that kind of disease. So that's why people are worried. It's kind of starting to learn to transmit between people, and we certainly don't want a virus with that kind of death rate doing that kind of thing.
And also in your book, you make a proposal for a pathogens treaty, a treaty that would then apply to all the nations of the world. Just summarize it really quick because we're running out of time.
Well, we have a pathogens treaty, but we need to give it teeth. The WHO needs to be able to go in and conduct the kind of inspections we do now for, say, chemical weapons or nuclear material, and be able to go in and see what kind of diseases people have.
Okay, Deborah, once again, your book is called COVID-19, the pandemic that never should have happened, and how to stop the next one, on sale soon. And once again, you've been listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Every week on Science Fantastic, we profile some of the most engaging, important, and scientific discoveries that'll touch your life. And give us a call. The hotline number, if you want to get on Science Fantastic, is 612-564-8135.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. And the IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.